Hello, good evening.
Hello. Yes.
Hi, this is Maria.
Hi, Maria, this is Grace. I guess we're the first ones logged in today.
Yes, I like your name, Grace. I like it.
Thank
Beautiful.
You.
Beautiful. Where are you calling from?
Florida.
Oh, great. Great. How warm is it?
Today is actually a pretty cool night, so it's like 75, so it's not bad.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Where are you calling from?
From New York.
Oh, okay. Where in New York?
Long Island. And I heard in one of the recordings that there is another lady that is from Long Island, and I would like to connect with her because she's a coach, and I'm that also, you know, to...
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I lived in Long Island, too, for a little bit.
You?
Yeah.
Where exactly? Huh.
Well, I used to live in Long Island. I lived in Westbury, and I lived in Farmingville also.
Oh, great. Yeah. The church that I'm attending right now is in Farmingville. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you're familiar with this area and also with the taxes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, that I would like to, at some point, to connect with people close, but also from far, you know. That's what the beauty of technology. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And actually, I'm not from here. I'm from the Caribbean.
Where in the Caribbean?
Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm from Dominican Republic.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, Father. Beautiful. And I like your name, seriously. It represents a lot to me. Do you believe in Jesus?
Yeah. Yes. Mi nombre es Altagracia. Altagracia.
Okay. Pues encantada. Great.
Igual.
Encantada, mira qué pequeño es el mundo. Pues me gustaría, no sé de qué forma se podría uno conectar, no sé, porque... ¿Quieres mi número? Yo tengo, ya sí, sí. Tengo papel y todo. Dime, hasta gracias.
Ah, ok. 818.
818, ajá.
588.
588.
5086.
5086. Alta gracia. Pero te voy a poner Grace. Como tú quieras que yo te llame. Mi nombre es María y mi teléfono es 317-966-8528.
8528. Okay. Perfect.
So, are you doing coaching too? Or what kind of business are you in?
Coaching. I do career transition coaching and life coaching.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm targeting right now.
Yeah. Life coaching?
Yes. Also the career transition, but other kind of transitions.
Yeah, because the funny thing is, the people that God sent me, some of them want to start their own business, because I wanted to focus on women mostly going from, women going from being employees to starting their own business. But God sending me not only women starting their own business, but women whose husbands have passed. I got a couple of widows. I got women who just got divorced. Women who are about to have a baby.
Good gossip. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. I noticed a couple of people got the time zones mixed up and called in an hour early. It's 7 Eastern, 5. So you can figure that. Well, thank you for the kind words and the responses I've gotten. In response to a couple of questions, there's just a very brief vignette that I want to present that kind of illustrates a principle that I didn't really have time for before. But first, questions, clarifications, thoughts about what we've done in the first couple of seminars, and any comments or questions you have about any aspect of that? how are you finding the material in terms of the application to your actual practice, either working with clients or marketing your practice? I know that most of you, if not all of you, are professional coaches, so that's a bit unusual that there are not other professional groups represented, so that allows us to talk more specifically. How are you finding the application?
Right now, it's mostly on the website. Like, it's mostly I've been applying it to my marketing and my website, how I'm changing the stuff around on my website to gear more towards the client and the type of client that I want and what they're looking for instead of information about me.
You've already made honors in this seminar series if you're doing that, so that's great. And you really heard about it. It's about them, not about you. I'm going to be talking some more about that and about today, mindset mastery development. But I think that's really important. So thanks for sharing that. I'm glad you're looking at that. It'll be interesting to see what kind of responses you have before and after, or do a split screen and see what kind of responses you have with one approach and then compare it to another approach. So thanks for that. Who else? Any other questions? Well, let me mention one application in response to a couple of questions, and I thought about this as I read both of the comments. This is very recently. I tell you what, I will go on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the background noise, and we'll get into our material in just a minute, but I'll do this on lecture mode. Okay, this is in response to someone asking about application and practical application in various ways, and I thought about a recent conversation I had with an executive client who I can't say specifics because everything is confidential and privileged, but he was about to have a client in his office where there would be a major multi-million dollar decision made on the basis of the conversation and the meeting. So I asked him a couple of questions. First I asked, how long will the meeting be? And he said, probably about 3.5 hours. And I said, what are your plans for when it will be in the day, snacks and that sort of thing? And he said he didn't have any plans. So I said, I want to tell you a couple of studies that will help us to look at how to configure that. And I said, this is going to sound a little goofy, but where does the person sit in terms of where you are when you present? He said, well, I don't know. I said, let's plan that. So the first thing that I shared with him is that there are certain physiological things that affect decision-making. For example, a study of the decision-making characteristics of 8 parole judges in Israel was reported in the National Academy of Sciences. Their average parole rate was 35%. They granted parole to just over a third of people. Now, their decision was looked at in terms of the time when it was made, just after the mid-morning and mid-afternoon snack and lunch. The 3 times that they ate, the parole rate was 65% at the time when their blood glucose was lowest, just before lunch and just before the day ended. The parole rate was almost 0%. So when their blood glucose was lowest, they reverted to a very judgmental, even for judges, an authoritarian and critical position. So what we did was to plan when in the day and when the snacks would be for the person who would be making a huge investment decision with him. And, you know, I mentioned, we talked a little bit about this person, and he could say it without revealing anything confidential. And something came up, and I told him of another study. Emotional states can activate unconscious biases, a study of 16 years of case files of judges with bachelor's degree from LSU found that judges gave significantly harsher sentences after LSU lost a football game it was expected to win. So we knew that this guy had season tickets and a, you know, a box at a particular, so we didn't, I suggested that he not schedule it on a Monday after a big game unless he was willing to cancel it. Now, one other thing that and this is all sounds sort of goofy, but yet everything is really important. In terms of me asking him where he sat in terms of where the person sat, because I knew it was a seated deal, I shared with him other things that influence decision-making include fatigue, alcohol, having too many choices. But here's one study. There are actually two studies by Dr. Tomasi and Marzola in Italy showed that when someone speaks into a recipient's right ear, the positive response rate is 75% more successful when they speak into the person's left ear. So I suggested that he seat himself on the person's right. Now, who knew? I'd been talking in my wife's left ear all these years. So those are just some instances that emphasize how little things seem sort of goofy, but yet they can make a difference. And on follow-up, he nailed his conversation, and the person invested $35 million. So it worked. So we're talking today now. And again, any questions, thoughts, comments you have, email me, or we'll save some time at the beginning and the end of the discussion. So we're talking about mindset mastery development. And you'll see below the title in your outline, people do not buy products, they buy states. That's a reiteration. Now, here's the quiz for today. Carnegie Mellon did a large study to determine the major factors for professionals earning the trust of others. So, and the answer is one of these four. This is not a trick like the first. Which was the most important? An established, proven expert, confidence of the professional, demonstrated current expertise, or reputation? I'll give you the answer in just a bit. Jot down your answer. Now, when we're talking about mindset, we're talking about a set of assumptions and beliefs that determine how we perceive and process and behave. It's analogous to the software program on a computer. Each state of mind is its own software program, and our mindsets consciously and unconsciously determine our choices. To say that a different way, every state of mind has its own story. So it's helpful to know what that story is if you want to engage it, and especially if you want to influence it. Elite athletes know how to get themselves in an optimum state before going on the court or field and how to sustain it. Masterful actors, speakers, and storytellers do as well. I've worked with each of these in mentor coaching. Getting in state is mental, emotional, and physical. A significant persuasion and leadership competency is self-regulation and self-management, knowing your own skills and deploying them effectively in a mindset that's specifically matched to the task. So let's first talk about mindset strategies of successful persuasion. How do you get a potential prospect you may not know or don't even see in a state of mind to consider your service or product? Think about that for just a moment. And when you've experienced it as a recipient of a message, what's worked for you? The next time you want to get someone on board with your idea or service, simply tell a story where you spell out the best outcome. We now know from mind and brain sciences that storytelling is the most powerful way to plant ideas into someone's mind. Stories are how we make sense of things. They're how we remember. Stories engage emotionally and explain logically. When we're being told an effective story, it activates not only the language processing areas, but also the areas used in experiencing the events of the story. Someone tells us how delicious a peach is, our sensory cortex lights up. When it's about emotion, our right neocortex gets active. When the story character grabs an object, motor neurons activate. When the character observes a scene, vision-related neurons fire. A story puts the whole brain to work. Stories affect us mentally as well as physically. Ann Crindle at the Dartmouth Brain Lab showed how viewers' brains resonated with the specific emotion enacted on the screen. When the central character was angry, the viewer's brain registered anger as well. When the scene was sad, the viewer's brains corresponded. Whenever we feel disgust, that brain region, the anterior insula, fires. Look at any book that you pick off of a business section or a nonfiction section at a local brick-and-mortar store. Look at the first chapter. I almost guarantee you that the first chapter will begin with a story because the book has to engage. And the book's made it that far. So it's rare. It's made it that far to an actual bookstore. We sense the other person's intentions and imagine what an experience means in his or her mind. Mind sight, our innate ability to see in each other's minds, relies on attunement and empathic resonance with another's subjective experience, emotionally and cognitive. The teller's state of mind and intention is key to the listener's reception. For example, if we sense the other person's phony or distracted, we automatically distance or tune out. When someone genuinely attunes, it enhances the inclination to respond and to reciprocate. So what this means is that getting in state needs to be before you engage your reader or listener. Relax your body, control your breath, get solidly grounded to access an optimum state of mind for a particular task. The primary reason to get in state is to concentrate your full energy on a full, undisturbed immersion in your engagement, to enter the state of mind that has the optimum skill development and information for the task. It's something I think can be very helpful before I take any call with any client, before I do any teleseminar. I spend just a moment in a mindfulness meditation to get focused, concentrated, and grounded to be in an optimum state to respond. People like, respect, trust, and are influenced by those who have the ability to remain calm and thoughtful. This default setting to remain centered and grounded no matter what becomes an essential success paradigm. Like any state of mind, it's contagious. Amygdala to amygdala, midbrain to midbrain, regulating your own state of mind in a sustained way is the most effective influence on someone else to do the same. So here are four principles, the mindset tools of persuasion. We'll discuss these in detail because I think they're so important. The context is authenticity. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. So first is rapport. For a long-term impact, establish authentic, caring, and emotional investment. And remember, you want to know what you can do for them. You want to know their challenge. And remember the persuasion principle of reciprocity. Highlight mutual interest, the persuasion tool of relatedness. Tell a story that solves a challenge that's related to the person you're speaking to. At two, ask questions. Redirect the focus from problems to possibilities. Appreciative inquiry, remember what we talked about. Move to a mindset of openness and exploration. Remember that the focus determines a state of mind. Paint a picture of a positive outcome. When people imagine, it becomes real for them. Three, personal congruity. What you say verbally and non-verbally needs to match. The person who feels the most certain is the greatest influencer. And for state management of yourself and to impact emotions and state of mind of your prospect. So here's the difference between success and failure. The two most important determinants of success are these: beliefs and state management. Belief is the blueprint, the software of the unconscious mind. Belief is the mind's command to the brain. Focus aligns the energy field of the brain, and repeated focus rewires the brain. This is the way belief becomes an anatomical reality. Remember, we talked about facts, beliefs. All of those are anatomical realities in someone's brain. That's why you want to know what their beliefs, what their experience, what their challenges are. Because change can occur, but it's an internal matter. Beliefs then determine what we will or won't do. What we believe, the meaning we feel certain will come from situations, determines how we behave and what we're going to do. Social neuroscientists show us that we have to believe in what we're selling or we simply won't sell. So how do you create a new belief? The oak sleeps in the acorn. Success comes to those who become success conscious. Failure enhances when there's focus on the negative or on problems. The only method of voluntary conscious development of belief is repetition of affirmations to your unconscious. We come to believe what we repeat to ourselves, whether it's true or false. If a lie is repeated, it ultimately is experienced as the truth. The teller ultimately can't tell the difference. This neuroscience principle emphasizes the need and power of positive focus. Visions are the seedlings of reality. If you can't see significant wealth, for example, in your imagination, in your vision, you won't see it in your bank account. Systematic, repeated visualization rewires the brain. Affirmations are stories that support the visualizations to revise mind software. You're not ready for something until you believe you can acquire it. Belief can be inscribed by affirmation or repeated instructions to your unconscious mind. Repetition of affirmation to your unconscious is a powerful method of voluntary development of belief. Any thought that's repeated is passed on to the unconscious mind and becomes accepted ultimately. This is as true for wealth accumulation as it is for other consistent repetitions like crime. People will say yes much more readily to your belief than to your information or technical sales skills. So the first sell is to yourself. Selling is a transference of emotion. You must feel certain to make someone else believe. The primary way you convince yourself is if you're convinced. You will transfer whatever state of mind you're in, whether that's doubt or confidence. The second difference between success and failure is state management. Here's an everyday application. Recognize and understand emotional couplings. Regardless of how logical we think we are, our first register of a new stimulus is emotion. Emotions travel faster to brain decision centers than rational thoughts. Any new input goes directly to the amygdala, then to the hippocampus where it attaches meaning. This is the seat of the unconscious, as psychoanalysts refer to it. Then it goes to the forebrain to process consciously and intellectually to make logical sense. So when the hippocampus attaches meaning, this is why what someone associates to you, to your practice or your company is so important, because people make decisions first in an emotional way. Up to 10 seconds, neuroeconomists show us, faster than we're consciously aware of it. We make purchase decisions several seconds before we're even consciously aware that we do. and before we become aware of why we're going to make it make sense logically and consciously. So our state of mind, the software package, determines the meaning we attach to a stimulus, and the meaning attached determines the behavior. So again, each state of mind has its own beliefs, associations, and set of experiences. So you're at home relaxing after dinner with your partner, having a glass of wine and a great conversation. There's a noise in the backyard. You likely don't notice it, or if you do, you kind of dismiss it. Next evening, you're home alone just after you've watched Criminal Minds, so it's a Wednesday evening, and you hear the same noise. You're alert to it. You're vigilant. You check it out. Same stimulus, but your state of mind determines the meaning you attach. Everything at the lower emotional brain and the midbrain are unconscious processes. This is part of the 90 to 95% that we've discussed that neuroscientists tell us is part of our processing system that's unconscious. The emotional activation registers before cognitive areas of the brain come into play to assess options. So once you unconsciously make an emotional commitment to a yes or no, then the lower brain structures send the conscious mind on a mission to gather all the logical information to support that decision. We then cherry pick data to make it make sense, to support that belief that's already occurred. We find something logical and sensible for it to light on, even if it's not accurate cause and effect. This rationalization becomes a confirmation bias. We inhabit the story we want to believe, and we fail to notice contradictory data as an inattention blindness. So we're going to be more entrenched in what we've come to believe, what we've decided and come to believe. So the part of the brain that anticipates pleasant outcomes, the nucleus accumbens, activates a buy decision. For example, a don't buy decision originates in the insula, an area involved in anticipating pain because you have to give up something that's yours, your money. So the anticipatory emotions bias as well as drive decision-making. You've already made a decision at the midbrain. So this is how credit cards, for example, can decouple those two parts of the brain, buying, activation of the pleasure center, and paying, activation of the pain center. The pleasure of the purchase is segmented from the pain of the future payment. So repayment or payment is a future abstraction. It's next month. And optimism bias say, well, we'll have more money later, and at least it's next month. I'll deal with it then. So one application is it's hard to say because of the way our minds work and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure of buying because saving is an abstraction and it's a future event. There's no immediate payoff, so it's difficult to substitute a theory for an immediate payoff. This is how it may be helpful to make one good decision that will last the rest of your life, such as automatically transferring money from your savings to your retirement each month. But that's a different teleseminar series. So let's look at regulating states of mind. So again, your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. There are two primary ways to regulate your state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology is how you use your body to change your state of mind. Examples: relaxation, deep breathing, a mindfulness meditation, even brief. And two, focus is what and how you direct conscious attention. From quantum physics and brain science, you get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. So what you focus on, what you pay attention to, simply means your brain works like a camera. It focuses on whatever you point it to. There's a lot of other stuff out there, but you're focusing on one thing. By holding one thing in conscious awareness, we sort of give inattention to other things. So we have an immediacy bias. We assign undue weight to whatever we pay attention to in the moment. The questions we ask determine what we focus on. And this is why they're so important with clients. Questions direct the focus and therefore determine the state you're in. So this is, I think, really important. Let me give you an example here. I was asked to do a workshop at a Vistage group. The Vistage chair, a buddy of mine, indicated that two of her members, one a CEO and the other a business owner, had each experienced challenging incidents at their companies. One involved an accident with a loss of life. Another was tragic in a totally different way, but both created stress in the executives and the organization that remained unresolved. And this was like 4 months later, and both had indicated in different ways it was still impacting the organization. So as part of what I did with the group and in the workshop we did, I described how we're always asking ourselves questions. Even when we wake up in the morning, before we're even consciously aware, we're asking questions. And the two people confirmed that they had been every morning, before they even turned on their bedside lamp, asking questions about what can go wrong today. Can I really do this? Negative thoughts that put them in a state of mind that rolled into a mindset that they used in their business. So I suggested this exercise. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because it may be helpful for you to try before when you wake up in the morning or before you go into an important meeting or even before you have a conversation with a potential client. I suggested to them, sometime before you go to bed, write down three questions that would create a positive, powerful state of mind. As soon as you wake up in the morning, before your feet even touch the floor, answer those questions. Feel the answer to each of the three questions to put you in an empowered, positive state. For example, what will I create today that would be more powerful than I ever dreamed of? Something that would put you in a powerful state of mind. The feedback I got from both of them, in less than 1 week, they both created a positive turnaround in focus, attitude, and engagement for themselves, their executive team, that trickled down to the organization itself. Asking effective questions determines a state of mind. This is your power of focus. Ask habitual questions that empower you. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to get us to use our own resources. The first application to yourself, next to your client, in that order. And this is one of the hallmarks of coaching. When you walk in a room, instead of the assumption that the wisdom lies at the front of the room and you're going to give out information and all kind of how-tos and some brilliant stuff, assume that the wisdom resides in the room itself, in the people in the room, and you will catalyze that. You will crystallize it into a very different process than giving information. So let's look at an optimum performance state of mind. The difference between a professional and an amateur, between massive success or less, is the ability to manage a state of mind, to achieve and sustain a peak performance state. So, here's a mindset formula for optimizing persuasion. And this is a reiteration. Find the challenge, the problem, the deep want or interest that is unfulfilled. Once you've found that person's challenge, show them how to solve the problem or meet the challenge. You may even think about associating positive consequences if they do and look at what negative consequences they are able to come up with if they don't. This mindset formula of persuasion associates buying with getting pleasure and not buying with pain. And remember, we've talked about this before, people will do more to avoid pain than to seek pleasure, risk aversion. This is why the focus on results and consequences becomes more effective. Here's an important summary. The primary reason that we do what we do is how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. This persuasion process is centered on getting the prospect to clearly associate their most desired feeling or state with your product or service. Not telling them what it's going to be, but this is generated from them. They put it in their own output channel. They've incorporated this to creating their own story about what you have to offer. So let's look at that from a slightly different vantage point. The three primary reasons someone fails to persuade: not managing mindset. This is often the difference between success and failure. No compelling purpose during a challenging time, or simply limiting beliefs such as, it won't work, I've tried it before, I don't think I can do it. One of the major insights that neuroscience brings to the business world, one of the most powerful, is the ability to understand how a consumer connects various concepts about your brand at an unconscious level. It's crucially important to have a clear and specific understanding of how individual elements that make up the existing unconscious perceptions apply to your product or your service. I'm mentioning this to adumbrate what we're going to talk about next seminar. This is the subject of neuromarketing that we'll talk about next seminar. People love people who change their state. That's why entertainers are paid so much more than educators, pro athletes than service people. We want to be around people who change our state for the better. So let's apply that to your business. Your state of mind will have emotional contagion. Manage your state because it induces a state in others. You associate positive or negative emotion and state to your services or product. So does your prospect. They will follow you. If you're not in a peak state, such as a down feeling or a lesser expectation, that will be emotionally contagious. Authentic energy is contagious. When your story truly excites you, when you totally believe, when you let that confidence show, it will be infectious to prospects. Your authenticity of genuine enthusiasm and conviction will resonate with prospects. So consider this question. Why can someone who begins at a peak state with a prospect come across as hyper or like a typical salesperson and turn that prospect off? Think about how you've experienced that. The answer, they don't begin where the prospect is. They begin with where they are. Remember, the first step is to empathically resonate, to become attuned, and find a way to communicate that experience. The result co-creates a common ground, a reciprocal connection. Then the client or prospect will go someplace new with you to follow your lead to arrive stepwise at the same place. Remember the example I gave from many years ago, the patient who said, no, Kruger, first you have to be with me before I can go someplace new with you. And that's a brilliant, simple synopsis of the principle we're talking about right now. So consider these questions for your reflection. How much money, how many prospects have you lost because you haven't been in a peak state in the last 3 months, in the last year? How much has it cost you emotionally, regret, pain, less energy, less money, of not being in a peak state in the last 3 months, in the last year? In the next 5 years, what will it cost you if you don't master this ability? In the next 5 years, what if you operate at peak state and enjoy the process? Selling is a transference of emotion. You associate your state to your product or service. People then associate your state to your product or service. People buy a state. State change is activating. So here's a summary of mindset management principles. There are four. estate is what you're selling more than a product or service. Selling is influencing the prospect's focus, the value, the benefits, the pleasure, and to avoid pain. Three, questions to determine what we focus on and the state we're in. And four, the mindset of self-reflection fosters thoughtfulness, depth, and wisdom. Yours, then the client's. So, match your optimum state of mind to the specific task. Anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. It may be by focus and physiology, a focus phrase and a deep breath, or by a brief relaxation meditation. Remember, your optimum state for some things, like a presentation, may be to energize yourself and generate optimism. For other things, like working with a client, it may simply be to get fully centered and grounded. Or something at the other end of the spectrum, perhaps, to go to sleep. It may be a full relaxation. So you want to match your focus phrase and effectively enter the optimum state for a particular task. So let's talk a little bit about confidence. We know from numerous neuroscience studies that emotions and states of mind are contagious by an energy field transfer, amygdala to amygdala, person to person. Einstein referred to this as the unified field theory. He emphasized that we are each a bundle of energy and interact with another person who's also a bundle of energy, and those energy fields intersect and interact. Same with each person and the collective energy field of a group of other people. And I can guarantee you this happens just as well over the telephone as it does face-to-face. Confident is a state of mind. People naturally associate confidence with expertise, the induction of a shared experience, a mutual influence of energy fields plays a role in our affinity for confident people. So here's the answer to the Mindset Mastery Quiz, the Carnegie Mellon study. The major factor for professionals earning the trust of others, the confidence of the professional. Simple, confident explanations trump expertise even in a number of studies. Mirror neurons and energy fields resonate with another's emotional state and influence behavior. This is what we know. Confidence is more correlated with success than with competence or expertise. Confidence is what initially engages someone. It's what people will pay you for. Now, you have to develop competence and expertise so that confidence has a solid foundation and you deliver authentically. But don't forget that initial engagement, that bridge. Since we know that confidence is a significant predictor and determinant of success, be aware of conscious and unconscious biases. For example, in studies with business school graduates, men initiate salary increases 40% more than women do. And when both ask, women ask for 30% less than men. At Manchester Business School in England, Professor Marilyn Davidson said, "I've been doing this for 7 years now, and every year there are massive differences between male and female responses. The male students expect to earn significantly more than the women, and when you look at what the students think they deserve to earn, again, the differences are huge. You can never earn more in the outside world than you can in your own mind. If you earn 10% more or less than that income thermostat, you may automatically and unconsciously engage in automatic behaviors and patterns to reestablish the status quo, to move the thermostat back to the set point. You have to achieve it in your mind to change the thermostat before you achieve it in reality. And to say it simply, once something that's unconscious becomes conscious, it's no longer unconscious. We always present in a manner consistent with our self-confidence and self-concept, just as we do in any other role that we play. A self-concept regulates every aspect of our lives. It's the software that drives our behavior. Confidence is a state of mind that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. For example, if you do everything except close a discussion by making a specific professional recommendation to a client about your services and your fee, your self-confidence and presentation in that area needs to be addressed. The professional must always maintain the initiative. You've never heard other professionals, like doctors and attorneys, say something wishy-washy like, well, do you think it'd be helpful for us to work together? No, the professional makes a specific, confident recommendation. You don't let the guy with a shovel decide how many elephants are in the parade. So, when is the best time to make a sale? Is it after a vacation and you're relaxed, or when you have debt when you're really motivated, or a dry spell when you're motivated in a different way? The best time to make a sale is right after a sale. Confidence is a state of mind. Sustaining an optimum state is as important as changing a negative state and creating a state of mind of confidence. And consider this from the prospect's point of view. What's the major thing that holds the prospect back from making a purchase? Is it fear of making a mistake? Concern of not getting value? Worrying of paying too much? Question of not being able to use the product or service? The major thing that holds the salesperson back is the fear of rejection that the prospect may say no. So, two simple practical applications from the mind and brain scientist. Anything you do to avoid the possibility of being rejected ensures it. And the major thing that keeps you from getting what you want is your story about why you can't have what you want. Now, remember I discussed before in a discussion session or component of what we did about conversational intelligence and about how we know now the first few words of a conversation boots up a mindset in the listener. A conversation that begins in a collaborative, collegial mode activates the neurochemical system of bonding and connection, and the remainder of the conversation is processed with full attention, without judgment, and with a greater sense of trust since it's mediated by oxytocin. If the opening remarks is one that's perceived as judgmental or critical or authoritarian or adversarial, then it activates the brain circuitry of fight and flight. So this is important. Your opening remark determines whether the prospect will listen to you. It needs to be planned word for word. In the first 10 words, people decide whether they're going to listen to you or not. So don't begin with, well, here's how I would answer that. You've already used 7 words and you only have 3 left. All successful sales are based on one factor, a relationship. People don't buy from people they don't like, and people can't sell to people they don't like. Enthusiasm accounts for more of sales than closing ability and any other factor. The transfer of enthusiasm changes the state of the other person. Confidence begets enthusiasm. So this is a summary that's in your outline, a mastery model. And I'm not going to go into the detail here because I want to save some time for questions, but consider your body of work as the process, a series of experiments that can be interesting, intellectually stimulating, like solving a puzzle. This mindset is what activates new pathways and new neuronal networks in your brain. There are 4 detailed steps that are important. They're in your outline. The 4 steps are more detailed than I'm going to go into here, but the 4 steps are: look for models, people who are doing business in an innovative and effective way for you to understand the key parts, but to do it in your own way, to do your own story. 2, define the phases of your business, and there's some detail in the outline. 3, what's the next thing you want to add to your body of work? Describe it. Is it after you've established your initial coach? Is it group coaching? Is it a teleseminar? Create a model for it. Set a deadline. And 4, throughout, focus on the basics. Always look at the next step. Always have it planned, structured, but focus on the basics. And there are some specific detail in your outline, a bunch of bullets, I'm not going to go over here, that will detail that, and to look at that as a specific kind of outline to see how much you want to apply yourself. Now, we've touched on this before, but I want to elaborate it here about mindset and the circle of persuasion. Remember when I asked you to draw a circle and put a stick figure in it. Imagine your audience is a person you're trying to persuade. Draw a stick figure to represent that person. Next, draw a big circle around that stick figure. So this divides the world into two parts. Someone who understands the world the way the stick figure does belongs inside the circle, next to the stick figure. That is going to be what creates a listening by the stick figure, by the person inside. And then people who don't understand the way the stick figure does belong outside the circle. The stick figure is your prospect. To communicate effectively, your first job is to get in that circle. So if your prospects don't see you as belonging in that circle, they won't listen. Your point of view will not be seriously considered. You'll remain an outsider with little influence. Outside, nobody's going to listen to you, really. To enter, identify your prospect's biggest challenge. That's the bridge. Resonate with that experience. Articulate the challenge or the pain points as clearly as you can. This moves you into the circle. Listen carefully. See if you're right. See what you need to add or expand. Identify the kinds of emotions your prospects feel. Then put yourself in their shoes and ask why they're feeling that way. Their specific challenges. See what they see, feel what they feel, and then find some part of their emotional experience you can genuinely resonate with. You have to resonate with your audience where they are and find a way to communicate that understanding before they'll admit you into the circle. Now, here's an example. This is a description of how the circle technique works. It's a description by the Wall Street Journal of how Obama began winning presidential primaries and how people were puzzled about how he was charming voters in the heartland, people he shouldn't be appealing to by theory. Reporter Stephen Hayes followed Obama around and analyzed his circle strategy. When he addresses a contentious issue, Mr. Obama almost always begins his answer with a respectful nod in the direction of the view he's rejecting, a line or two that suggests he understands or even sympathizes with the concerns of a conservative. He moves into the circle in that way. It was Lincoln's approach to arguing a case, remember. Hayes cited an example in which Obama was asked about the Second Amendment. He began his answer by saying that having taught constitutional law for 10 years, he believed that the Second Amendment granted individuals the right to carry guns, the conservative position, and that he respected the right of lawful gun owners to hunt and to protect their families. Only then, after he was in the circle, did Obama go on to talk about how he thought there should be new laws to help trace firearms used in crimes. At the end of his answer, Obama employed one final circle move, kicking his opponent out. He said, "The argument I have with the NRA is that they believe any constraint or regulation whatsoever is something that they have to beat back. And I don't think that's the way most lawful firearms owners think." So, Obama is left standing next to the lawful firearms owners, his audience, inside the circle, while the NRA has just been declared bereft of common sense, not like us, cast out of the circle. Winning means not only getting inside, it also means pushing your opponent out. Not directly, maybe like this, but this is not a good example I would offer to you for this, but the circle vision suggests that to bring your audience to your side, your first move needs to be to go where your audience is. Remember, as we heard just in the comment at the beginning, it's about them. It's not about us. Connect with your audience. Then you can move forward together. Here's a Girl Scout variation of entering the circle. Most Girl Scouts are taught to memorize a fairly complicated spiel. one that involves introducing themselves, talking in detail about the good work that the scouts do, finishing with how the money raised goes for great purposes. Now, this is tough work, even professional, but for a kid talking to an adult stranger, it can be scary. There's an alternative that more than doubles the sales rate, however. It's the question to begin with. What's your favorite kind of Girl Scout cookie? Questions focus our brains, and the first few words determine a state of mind. In 10 words or less, all the nostalgic memories of cookies past are summoned. In one simple question, the power and the transition shift with the Girl Scout going from requesting to supplying. It's a question that avoids a no, a question that starts a conversation, and a question that opens the door to emotion. Those are the kind of questions that create value and build careers. The experience from the buyer's point of view is an emotional connection to something that's been in his or her life since being a kid. There's a reason they don't change the flavors of those cookies, by the way, as well as a positive reaction to a young person's learning to speak up. Selling a state of mind far outpaces only selling Thin Mint cookies. Changing a strongly held belief has more to do with storytelling than facts or logic. Storytelling is emotional and persuasive. Stories are more powerful than data because they allow us to identify emotionally with ideas and people otherwise disregarded or seen as outsiders. We tend to align with people who share our identity, even if the facts disagree. So here's a very brief summary of what we've talked about, a mindset mastery summary. This is in your outline. People buy for emotional reasons and justify with logic. Emotions drive us. Find the emotional reasons for buying now. Find the logical reasons then, secondly, for buying now, because people need to justify, secondly, with logic. But it happens in that order. The purpose of a conversation, written or spoken, is to find the prospect's needs, their challenges, to mutually create conviction. Conviction starts with you first, then the prospect. Selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they must feel certain they're going to get what they want. When two people interact, the person with the greater confidence will influence the other. Prospects have to buy for their reasons, not yours. Facilitate the prospect's conviction that they will get what they want out of your service or product by matching their core identity, their core value. People always return to their identity. That's how we make decisions, is when that part of our brain lights up that's associated to one particular thing, that's a slam dunk that that's the one we're going to buy. Find the predominant emotional reason for buying first. And remember, they'll translate it into logical reason. For brain processing, do one feature at a time, not the whole lot. The authentic connection and how you say will make more difference than what you say. And finally, consistently focus on prospects' benefits, values, and avoiding pain. There's an additional resource that I want to mention before we go to discussion mode. On the homepage of my website, MentorPath, there is a webinar that's about 35 minutes long, Master States of Mind. It's on the homepage, it's front and center, and you just have to click on and you'll be able to listen to it and see the whole webinar unfold. I would recommend that. I'm a little biased, but I highly recommend it for really understanding in more depth about states of mind, because I believe that's such a crucial aspect of what we do with others, how we influence others. We're in discussion mode now, if you'll manage the background noise. Thoughts or questions or comments that anyone would like to make?
Hi, this is Denise. I really like the comments or the analogy about Obama and the Girl Scout cookies. It really made me look at it in a whole different light.
Great. Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, from my discussion at the beginning of the last two seminars, it was like, give us some more examples. And that's where Tom Sawyer and my $35 million man came from. So, I appreciate that this is all. I know that I'm compressing a whole lot of information in a very succinct period of time. That's my dilemma. I would much rather have a discussion and more of a seminar like unfolding, but there's so much I want to pass on to you, and all the important things are in the outline, but to really cover it so you can refer back to it and hopefully make your best application. So thank you for that. Other thoughts or comments or clarifications?
Hi, this is Belinda.
Please, go ahead.
Hi. Hey, I'm quite fascinated by where you were talking about the different parts of the brain, amygdala, hippocampus, and forebrain. And it sounded like that was a really important thing to understand. And also asking questions. I'm wondering, are there kind of specific questions that light up different parts of the brain?
That's a really good question. A question tends to focus attention, like I mentioned, the analogy of a camera. And a focus on a question opens more of the mindset of possibility. So it activates new thoughts and new ways of looking at things, as opposed to asking about a problem or exploring more about a problem. That goes into a track of the brain, a groove that's already there, and it etches it further. Even ostensibly, when you look at solving the problem or creating a way to come to the end of the past, it etches it further in the brain. That's why people get stuck in therapy and counseling, because they look at solving problems. That's what we do differently in mentor coaching, is to look at possibilities, because that's activating and creates new neuronal connections and pathways that can be stimulating. And that's where the aha moment, the moment of insight that lights up three different parts of the brain that I mentioned, comes from, as opposed to giving facts or information, because it's not how people remember, it's not how our minds work, and no part of the brain lights up with that. So it's really the process of the questions and looking at possibilities more than delving into problems that creates a mindset to really further engagement, and that engagement then is what you want to think about in terms of the challenge that someone has, and looking at entering that circle of resonating empathically with the challenge to create a common ground where you can go someplace new together. And looking at possibilities then converts a period into a comma so that you explore further, and that you're perturbating a system. Think about it from a client's point of view. They come to us because their script is not working, because somebody or some people in their lives are not responding as they think they should to the script that they have in mind. If somebody's script was working, if people responded like they thought they ought to, then they wouldn't need us. But it's when their script doesn't work that it's challenged or perturbated in some way that's when change can occur. And that's what we do. We look at creating that alliance first, so we can get away with saying what we need to say, to create a challenge together to look at other possibilities, rather than just trying to get somebody to, you know, respond as an extension of an interest or desire like they ought to be. I mean, we all know how other people ought to respond, but that's not the way it works. That's why we have clients, and that's how we can do something different with clients. So that doesn't address your question specifically in the way of, you know, what are some questions, but I would say avoid all those lists that you've ever seen or what are good questions, and think about the process of engagement and of opening and being curious together in a collaborative way about new or next or different. Does that make sense?
It totally does, yeah.
Okay,
asking great. About a problem actually etches it further, so that's kind of like a dead end, kind of closing the door,
got,
so that's not going to light up your mind.
Every client
yeah.
you have will have their problems
right.
down. They can tell you,
right.
they can talk endlessly about the problems, because that's their
right.
own territory. There's something that's kind of reassuring about entering a zone of the familiar, but it doesn't change anything.
Right. I understand.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you all very much. If there are other questions or comments or follow-up, email me, and we'll pick up right here next time and talk about neuromarketing, and I'll preserve some time at the beginning and the end for discussion. So look forward to picking up with you. Same time, same channel. Bye now. Have a
Thank
great
you.
Rest of the week. See you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.